Now today we are going to have a tape from Mr. Armstrong. However, we won't have it to start off with, as far as the service is concerned. It'll actually be the sermon today. It is, however, a short sermon. It's not a full-length sermon. It's just over 50 minutes long altogether. So in that sense, we've got a split sermon from Mr. Armstrong later on. And it was given back in July 1979. It was given when he was visiting Orr, Minnesota, where he was visiting the SEP, the Summer Educational Program, site in Orr, Minnesota. And so rather than go into a news analysis for the rest of the service today, what I thought I might do is actually talk about SEP a little bit, because we spent some very notable years there, and certainly some very happy years in many ways, helping with summer camp over in Loch Lomond. And Judy also went to Orr, Minnesota as well as a student. She thought she was going to go and look after the horses, and she was given 20-something children to look after instead. So it was a bit of a shock to the system at that time. Now, I used to help in sailing and windsurfing, and also things like speech clubs and so on. And my wife used to help as far as, well, actually look after the formal dining and the various the special dinners that they used to have there at SEP. So as I say, I'd like to talk about SEP, and I think, if you want a title for the sermon, I think the sermon title could be God's True SEP, because in certain instances, when we look back at SEP, things weren't always done the way they should have been done, but by and large, they were. It was a positive experience. The way of God was actually shown to the children, and the children themselves, I say children, they're all adults now, but the kids themselves at that time, they look back on it with fondness in the majority of cases. Not everybody, but certainly in the majority of cases. So what I'd like to do is talk about God's true SEP so that we can get our thinking really back on track in this area. And so what Mr. Armstrong is addressing, I hope it actually helps to augment what he's actually addressing in what he's saying to the campers at that time. And there are only three points I want to deal with, and the three areas I want to deal with in this split sermon. First of all, I want to talk about fun is forever, because so often in this world it's not. Fun is for one night stand, and then the reality then strikes home thereafter. But fun is forever. That's one of the things that needed to be absorbed, if you like, and understood by the campers at that time. Secondly, teamwork. Teamwork was something which was built. There are many people who have spent literally many thousands and thousands of pounds sending managers on team building exercises, which are really a glorified SEP. There's nothing much difference between the two of them. So teamwork was certainly a large part of it. And thirdly, the third point is give it a go. In other words, get in there and enjoy life, and to really just give it a go, give it a try, overcoming fears and so on. It was interesting that towards the tail end of SEP, we talked to this person that was going to be taking over, and my wife was talking to him, and apparently he said, oh, we're going to scrap CI. Now, CI was campus improvement. Campus improvement is where you were all given a black bin bag, and you went around and you picked up rubbish off the field or wherever you found rubbish, and you tidied the place up. But that was going to be scrapped, and the reason for that being scrapped is, oh well, it doesn't give them enough time to enjoy camp. And that statement basically illustrates a certain way of thinking, and the way of thinking had gone wrong. The way of thinking about showing God's way worked, which is what the motto of SEP was all about, showing that God's way works, that had slipped. And what had been replacing that was simply just giving the kids a good time. And campus improvement is certainly part of showing God's way work. It may not give the kids a good time. It may be not something that they want to do. But nevertheless, it shows that it's part of God's way. It's showing a way of life. And it's showing them a side of life that is very, very necessary. Even at that time, when you had campers doing the washing up or something like this, instead of singing the songs that they would have at the sing-alongs, which they would do as a dorm, actually contributing in that way, they instead started bringing in transistor radios and started playing tapes and so on in the wash-up tent. And these, the standards started to slip, the standards of the application, the understanding. Once the understanding had gone, then SEP as we knew it went. So going into this first point, that fun is forever, that motto, God's way works, when you really think about it, what are you actually saying? Well, what you're actually saying is God's law works. That's really what is being said, because the word law, Torah, in Hebrew, literally means the way. That's what it means. It, when you say God's law, you're not actually referring to the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments summarize the law of God. But the law of God is spiritual. It's a spiritual law, it's a spiritual way that the Ten Commandments then reflect. The Ten Commandments are literally, the word for commandments in Hebrew is literally word or phrase. So these are the ten words or the ten phrases that summarize this way of life. The law itself was all the first five books. You find it, this spiritual application of this way of life within all those first five books. And this is why, when you say the motto, God's way works, you're saying God's law works. You're also saying God's government works as well. Because God's government is this same way of life. It's administering this way of life in love down to those that were, are, you know, reliant on you. And it's administering that way of life backwards in love, in the kind of obedience and cooperation that is necessary for those that have been given jobs of responsibility. If we turn over to John chapter 10, John chapter 10, we find here in John chapter 10, Jesus Christ speaking to the disciples. And he says in verse 8, he says, all that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. The sheep being the people that actually are listening to, or have their minds open to, so that they can listen to the literal word of God, the living word of God. I am the door, and by me, if any man enter in, he will be saved, and he will go in, and he'll go out, and he'll find pasture. Pasture being those words, pasture being the material necessary to live that kind of life of a God being. It says, the thief comes not to, except for to steal and to kill and to destroy, but I am come that they may have life, and that they may have that life more abundantly. And it is that abundant life that Mr. Armstrong certainly implemented SEP. He tried to demonstrate to the kids that actually went there that here is a way that works, that is fun, not just now, but it'll be fun tomorrow. It'll be fun in 10 years' time. It'll be fun in 20 years' time. And if they did apply that, and they applied it in the right way, then they would start to understand that, yes, indeed, it is fun. And when you look over in Isaiah, turn over to Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35. You find here, looking forward into the future, that this, in fact, is going to go on. It's not going to just end with SEP. It's not just ending with the church. It says in Isaiah 35, verse 1, that the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, for Israel it is. And the desert will rejoice and blossom as the rose. This way of life will be extended into the entirety of the world, including the desert places. It will blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon, that's the forest area, shall be given to it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, that's the plains area. They shall see the glory of the Eternal and the excellency of our God. And you're looking at an excellent way, and this abundant eternal life eventually. Strengthen the weak hands, confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that have a fearful heart, be strong. Fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even a God with a recompense will come, and he'll save you, and then the eyes of the blind will be opened. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. And then shall a lame leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb will sing, and the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. It's a fantastic time where this same way of life will then be implemented in the world as a whole. And when you go down to verse 10, the result of this, it says, the ransomed of the Eternal will return and come to Zion. Now that Zion needs to be the church. It needs to be the church. That we who are meeting now here and wherever that church being led by the very Spirit of God is, they will come to Zion, to these people who have learnt God's way, with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads, and they will obtain joy, gladness, and sorrow, and sighing will flee away. That is what we're looking at. When you say fun is forever, it literally goes down to eternity. It will go forever. And the memories that we should have will carry on, whether it's a million years or 10 million years into the future, the memories will be good. And that is what needed to be put across the campus. That fun is forever. When you have real fun, you'll remember it 10 years from now, and that fun will remain fun. It will not have a bad taste in your mouth. It won't be there in a bad taste. And to do that, in Deuteronomy 6, there is a way of teaching this way, this law. And it's the same today, it's the same, it'll always be the same. When God teaches, it is not the same as just, you know, sit down, shut up, in the classroom, and get your books out. That, yes, there is a time for that, but that is not the way of teaching. That's not the way that God actually teaches. Here in Deuteronomy 6, verse 4, it says, "Hear, listen, O Israel, the Eternal our God is one Lord, one Eternal. And you shall love the Eternal your God with all your heart and soul and might." So let's get your focus, let's get your center right. "And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart." So you've got this way of life, and it's actually expressed by the words that you find within this law, within this Torah, which is the first five books, and certainly the last book of the law, Deuteronomy, was even itself regarded as the Torah, the law, the second giving of the law. "And you shall teach them diligently to your children," and this is how you do it. "You'll talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, on a sailboat, in leatherwork, on the mountain, in the speech club, on canoe trips, and evening bull sessions." And that's what it says. That's literally what it is saying. It's when you are doing all the various activities, you talk about the way of life. Not in some kind of pseudo-sanctimonious, syrupy, religious way. That's not what it's about at all. But there's a certain way of doing things. A way of doing things which is outgoing, which will cause things to be fun and to remain fun down into eternity. You know, what about safety? Well, safety was a big point. I know that, I mean, I used to look after, work with the sailing crew, part of the sailing crew. And life jackets were absolutely enforced. You don't have a life jacket on, you're likely to get sent back to your dorm, quite frankly. And not only just life jackets as you get in the boat, you weren't allowed, if you were coming down for a sailing session, you weren't allowed on the jetty, let alone the boat, before you had the life jacket on. And before you went out on the jetty, let alone the boat, the instructor had to inspect that life jacket and make sure it's been put on properly. And so the thing, when you do go in the water, it stays there. And that was part of the way. It's part of the way of doing things. To make sure that you don't rush out and do something haphazardly, but you do it in a logical way. Even the food that was served up there, even the tuck shop, it doesn't mean to say that you can't have a certain amount of sugar. I mean, obviously, you with these children rushing around here, there, and everywhere, you needed the carbohydrate, and it was a high carbohydrate diet. But in the main, it was trying to reflect a certain amount of balance in that area as well. In the case of dating and dating rules and the rules as far as the mixing up of the dorms, they were pretty stringently enforced. In fact, that was probably the biggest task the staff members had to have. Was keeping the two sides apart, but there were rules. They were able to mix in safety. They were able to mix and enjoy life, and yet there wouldn't be bad flavours that would be haunting them later on. You know, you're not going to have the VD, the pregnancies, the AIDS, if they did play by the rules, if the rules were there. And those that didn't keep the rules were sent home. They were sent home. Same with drugs. Yes, occasionally you'd have problems with drugs and drugs coming into the camp, but coming in from outside. But, you know, that's not giving fun which is forever. It's fun which is there for a moment and it's gone. And then you've got all the heartache involved as well. The strife that you find in the cliques. I know my daughter Amber was commenting that she's went to a camp completely unrelated to the church or anything at all. And she took her son down there. And she said it was so different from SEP. It just, you know, they just could not agree. There was not the cooperation that was there. And therefore, this fun was being diminished in that particular camp where she was able to go. Turn over to Proverbs 5. Proverbs chapter 5. Because here in Proverbs 5, it talks to us as children. And this is certainly something that it's almost, you know, it's designed for SEP. You know, my son, attend to the wisdom, to my wisdom. Bow your ear to my understanding. This is God speaking. These are the words. This is part of, it's not the law, the prophets and the Psalms. I mean, obviously Proverbs is not part of the law, but it's nevertheless, it's a re-giving of the same principles. That you may regard discretion, that your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. It looks great on the surface, he says, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword, and her feet go down to death, and her steps take hold on hell. You go down that certain route, and you will end up with a bad taste. And it's more than a bad taste. You could end up with VD, you could end up with a pregnancy, you could end up saddled with a child for the rest of your life, or perhaps an abortion, or whatever. It doesn't pay to go that route. So, when these things are put in place, when you have the way of God, and you show that way works, then you have fun. You're able to have that fun. Then that fun can be forever. Then that fun can go on, and 10 years down the line, you'll still look back on it, you'll still look upon it as fun. That's the way it ought to be. And that was what when you're looking at God's true SEP, the true SEP, the SEP that you're looking for, and that's what the aim was, that's what it was aiming for. Let's say, we didn't always hit it. It didn't always happen that way. There were some problems with drugs at SEP. And it's exceedingly dangerous to have that kind of thing. There was somebody actually took drugs before SEP, and wasn't he out on a ski boat or something, and he had an LSD kind of regress or whatever it was. It was a real problem one time. It wasn't a drug that he took there, it was a drug that had been taken before, and there's some kind of regress as a result of it. In this area of teamwork, and also really emerging from fun is forever and onto teamwork, in South Africa, the report that I had heard of in about South African SEP, there was a problem down there. And the problem was this, that the youngsters that were in the church, and there were many youngsters in the church, they would come to a certain age, a late teenage, and then they would need to go into military service. Now, military service was out for them. So instead of doing 2 years military service, they had to do 6 years community service. So that was the choice. 2 years military service, 6 years community service. Which are you going to take? So what many of them actually did was leave the church. And they left the church, went to military service, and got it over with in 2 years, then came back to church again. And this happened on a repeated scale. And so many of the young people in the church who were then the counsellors in the SEP, where had they got their training from? They'd got it from the military. And they then brought this training, thinking, oh, well, it's very similar to military training, because, you know, it's teamwork. It's all, you know, meeting together, pulling together and all the rest of it, and you're looking after your buddy. And they applied it then to SEP, and that caused some real problems. Some real problems. You see, it's not boot camp. And the boot camp mentality has no place within the mentality of God. None at all. Because the way entire mentality of the army is to get. It's to achieve your objective and kill whoever happens to stand in your way. That is the total antithesis of God's way. God's way is of love, it's of cooperation. And if you go over to Isaiah chapter 2, looking forward into the future, we find here in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 2, it says, it'll come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Eternal's house shall be established in the top of the mountains. The government of the God will be atop of all governments. There will be no other government which will be superior to it. So, as far as military terms, there's nothing that's going to stand in the way of God. And he says, and he shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. And many people will say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For where? Out of Zion, out of the church, shall go forth the law, the Torah, the way. Remember, it's not just the Ten Commandments. The word law is the way of life. It is the Torah. The commandments merely express that way. For out of the Zion will go forth the Torah and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. Now the commandments are words or phrases from Jerusalem. And he will judge among the nations. He'll rebuke many people. And they shall beat their swords to plowshares and spears to pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. The very learning of war, and the things that these kids, say within South Africa, had been taught, those things will not be learned. They will not be learned, and therefore they can't be taught. And as I say, it caused problems. And true teamwork, true cooperation, is based on an outgoing concern. It's based on love. That's the true cooperation. And that's what should have been. When you're looking at God's true SEP, that's what should have been there. And if any of those that are listening to me now had a different experience, understand that that experience was not the way of God. It is not the way that will be in the future. If there is an SEP in the future, which is a very good chance that there will be, that's not the way that it will be implemented at all. It doesn't come from the military, from the boot camp mentality. And those of us that perhaps have looked upon the army and looked upon the military as having something, oh well, it's fine, it's upstanding, it allows us to all cooperate and work together, don't you be dismayed, misled. That is simply not true. It is not the way of God. You're learning something, you're going in a direction which is the antithesis of an outgoing concern. You're going in a direction of teamwork, yes, but it's teamwork to kill. It's teamwork to destroy. And that is not the way of God. And that is not the way that was learned at the true SEP. When the SEP was working properly, the teamwork was a cooperation. The teamwork was actually the implementation of the very government of God. And that works in two ways. First of all, the way in which it works is from those that are over, they rule in love, and they rule in a way that is trying to upbuild and to help and to encourage those that are underneath them. Those that are under, and it doesn't matter, and everybody is over and everybody is under, those that are under then also cooperate with those that are actually having to make certain decisions. And they cooperate in such a way to help and to make sure that those decisions and the purposes that they're trying to achieve are actually able to be achieved. Another thing that happened as far as teamwork is concerned, that true and lasting friendships developed when at SEP. John chapter 15. Turn over to John chapter 15. This again is part of the way of God, in the way that Jesus Christ actually operated when he was here. But here in John 15, verse 6, it says, "If a man abide not in me, he's cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and they cast them into the fire and they're burnt." In other words, if you're not doing it his way, if you're trying to do it by boot camp, if you're trying to implement military tactics into the church, you will not be there. That's as simple as that. You cannot go ahead and start mixing the world with the ways of God and expect it to be the pure word of God. That is simply not true. So anybody that is not abide in me is cast forth, and men gather them and they are burned. And if you abide in me and my words abide in you, then you will ask what you will and it will be done to you. It's in that my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. And in that way, you're going to be my students. You're going to learn the very way of God. You're going to learn the right approach to life. And the right approach to having teenagers have a good time without all the kickbacks in something like SEP. "And as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. You continue in my love. If you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his. And these things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full." Now, we read it before in Isaiah about everlasting joy being upon their heads. And that joy comes from this word being there and being actually implemented in life. And it says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." It's not boot camp. It's not a military application. It isn't out there to cooperate, have teamwork so you can go ahead and kill. It is that you love one another as I have loved you, and greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. From this point, I'm not going to call you servants or slaves, for a servant doesn't know what his Lord does. But I've called you friends, for all things that I've heard of my Father I've made known to you. Now, even in camp, when camp was working properly, there was an ability even to see the ministry in a different light. You know, the ministry were, quite frankly, up there on the Sabbath day, you know, maybe a church of several hundred, and you'd attend, and some kids would just kind of attend the church services, and they would hardly ever say boo to a goose. They wouldn't dare talk to a minister. And yet here they suddenly find a minister on a surfboard falling in just like everybody else. I mean, or a minister, you know, saying, I remember one of the ministers actually coming up, and he got about 300 yards offshore and turned it upside down and had to be rescued. But you see people doing things which, quite frankly, you don't see them normally, and therefore they become more approachable. And it's, you know, doing stupid daft things or having silly songs being sung and dressing up and doing various things. But I know that these true lasting friendships and the ability to see the ministry and see the church in a different light is certainly part of what SEP was about. If you look at the teamwork as well, and you just imagine what teamwork is necessary for the world tomorrow, it again has got to be that right kind of teamwork. It's not going to be a boot camp. You're not going to have people cringing in fear with a big stick. Yes, you'll have ruling with a rod of iron, but it'll be ruling the nations with a rod of iron if the nations get out of step. But he's, you know, turn over to Isaiah 61. Isaiah 61. In Isaiah 61, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord Eternal is upon me," verse 1, "because the Eternal has anointed me to preach good tidings to the meek." Now here Christ actually mentioned this and read this when he was here. And he said, "He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound." Now this doesn't sound like a military boot camp. This is anything but. But the team building is certainly part of it. It says, "To proclaim the acceptable year of the Eternal, the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, and to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they may be called trees of righteousness and the planting of the Eternal, that he may be glorified, and they will build the old wastes. They will raise up the former desolations." Can you imagine the teamwork that is necessary to do this? But the world as a whole has got to cooperate. The world as a whole has got to work together in a certain way, and it's going to have to be God's way. And they will repair the waste cities and the desolations of many generations. If you notice in verse 11 it says, "And for as the earth brings forth her bud, and the garden causes the things that are sown in it to spring forth, so the Lord Eternal." So we look at the garden, you can see the flowers growing, you see the vegetables coming forth from the seeds. It says, "So the Lord Eternal will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nations." Righteousness and praise coming from the very way of God being implemented. Giving something, a life which is more abundant for eternity, with a future which is eternal. And he says, "For Zion's sake," that's 62 verse 1, "For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace. For Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, the salvation thereof as a lamp that burns." So it starts in Israel, it starts in Jerusalem. "That the Gentiles then can see the righteousness, and all the kings your glory, and you will be called by a new name which the mouth of the Eternal will name." Starting with Israel, the rest of the world will then see. It's almost like looking at SEP, you know, as daughter Amber was saying. She looks at the world outside, looks at the camps that she's attended outside, and the division, the strife, the lack of cooperation, the lack of working together destroys what they might have. All the fun in the world doesn't go ahead and do that. You've got to get the spiritual foundation right first. Then you can start to put all these other things into place. Then it starts to work. It starts to have the teamwork that is necessary. I know that my daughter Amber mentioned, as far as her first night, when she first came, the first night at camp, never been to camp before, first time she'd ever attended. And the first night of the entire session, they went on a mountain walk, mountain climb, up in the mountain. And that first night was spent in a plastic bag. In a plastic bag stuck on the side of a mountain with her dorm mates. And she said, you know, it was the best thing ever because it bound us together as a team. And it caused them to be as a team. I was talking to Estelle as well about how her experience, the best year that they ever had was the year the hurricane came through. Now, I remember that vividly because we were there with Mr. Suckling and whether it was hurricane force, it was certainly storm force and probably over storm. It could well have been a hurricane force. But it was such that literally tents were being lifted off their moorings and carried over fences. Judy saw one of the tents literally like fly up in the air and disappear over a fence into the next field. And the marquee, which is a large marquee, which is about, 70 feet? Oh, no, 100 foot long, something like that, 200 foot long. This thing was also starting to lift. And so the decision was made to flatten, just make it flat. So we let the whole thing down, all the guy ropes down, the whole lot. And every other tent, all the things were flattened to the floor just to keep the thing from being flying away. And there was pouring with rain. There was a howling gale. And you got all these children just suddenly arrived. This was right on the first afternoon, coming into the evening. Darkness was coming. And they kind of piled into the kitchen shed. And they had a sing-along. We had a sing-along. But, you know, again, that was the best one ever because there was this camaraderie and teamwork and pulling together. I always remember one of the things we used to do on the sailing crew is, as long as it wasn't too rough, and they were sailing, you know, reasonably well, I'd go through the motions of your trap, change, push, and then swing your tiller extension out over the water, you swing yourself around, your backside's pointed to the bow, and you go through all the various routines as to how to actually handle a boat. And they say, yeah, 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 yeah. And they're obviously not listening very much. And you've gone through it all, and you've put each of them onto the tiller, and then along comes the rescue boat. And it comes alongside, and you jump off. And as the rescue boat powers away, you see these wide-eyed mouths just hung. I think, now what do we do? What did he say? Did he say push or did he say pull? How do you steer this thing? And you leave them then out 1.5 miles away from shore, the three of them in a boat together, and the teamwork suddenly has to work. They've got to remember what they've just been taught, and they're all discussing, you know, what did he say? How do we do it? You know, all the rest of it. And it was something which you knew exactly what was going to happen. As soon as you jumped off the boat, you just knew this look of horror that was on the face. But it was one of the best things and the best ways of actually preparing somebody for actually being able to sail effectively. And it was a case of giving it a go. It was a case of getting in there, enjoying yourself, doing the things that you don't necessarily want to do, nor really, you know, pushing back the frontiers of fear, as they used to say. Turn over to Revelation 21. You know, God hates this Laodicean age, the age that we're in, which is an insipid age. It's an insipid age of the health and safety and all the rest of the rules and various nonsense that is imposed upon us so that nobody can ever do anything and nobody actually makes their mind up and goes for it. And here in Revelation 21, it says, and he said to me, it's done in verse 6, I'm Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. Now I give to him this thirst of the fountain of water of life. He that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I'll be his God, and he'll be my son. But the fearful and the unbelieving and the abominable, they are all lumped together. The whole lot are lumped together. The fearful, the unbelieving. We've got to overcome fear. Now, it's not wrong to have fear, but it is wrong to be fearful. It is wrong to be full of fear. And there's an overcoming of fear that is necessary. I remember one thing I used to do. If somebody was really, really scared of being capsizing and they were willing to do it, I'd choose a still day and take them out in a boat and we'd turn the thing over. And many times the reason why people are scared of capsizing is not the capsizing and going in the water. It's the fact that the boat will then come on top of them. And so what I used to do is take them out, turn the boat upside down with them on top, underneath, and me underneath as well. But in the boats that we had, there is an air pocket. When you turn that boat upside down, you might think it's dark underneath as well. It's not dark at all. What it is there is an air pocket underneath, and you can breathe there for half an hour, even an hour probably, without any real problem at all. You've got plenty of air to breathe. There's no problem at all. The sunlight is coming in the sides. It's going down into the water. You can see the sail immediately below you, right the way down to the end of the mast if the water's clear. And the light is hitting the water underneath and reflecting up so that the entire boat inside is completely light. There's nothing to be afraid of. You can feel outside. You feel out to the gunwales outside of the boat, and you can actually then just pull yourself underneath and pop out quite easily. Pop out, pop in again. And that used to get over the fear of capsize in certain instances. Not everybody. People think, you know, I'm not going out there capsizing in boats. But there's a technique of getting a boat back again. But it is a case. It's not wrong to have fear, but it's wrong to be filled with fear. The fearful is the problem. We even have this problem as far as being fearful of baptism. Some people are fearful of baptism. And that fear needs to be overcome. Again, it's the fearful and the unbelieving. It's the faith in God. God will see us through. Even if through sailing with John Bowles, you know, that really can be seen through. You need to ask the question, if you do have excessive fears, I'm not talking about fear of crocodiles or fear of sharks, I'm talking about excessive fears, ask yourself why. You know, if you're afraid of water, why? What's it go back to? Yeah, I mean, yes, you're okay getting drowned, but no, you don't have to drown in water. You ask yourself, and I was actually counting up how many sports there were at SEP. A quarter of them, in fact less than a quarter, were water based. Three quarters of them, over three quarters, were non-water based. And yet there is a fear there for people who don't like water. I remember talking to one person who said, you know, my recollection of SEP is white knuckles, basically holding on in water sports of one description or another. So, as far as giving it a go, turn over to Ecclesiastes 9. Ecclesiastes 9. I know that one particular time, I think I've given this before, I was out with three campers, three as a girls' dorm, and one little Irish girl was there, and it was squally. It was very squally. In fact, the canoes, the rescue boat couldn't help the sailors at all. The sailors just had to get on with it because the rescue boat was over with the canoes because they were just being swamped all continually. As soon as they'd get up again, they'd go over again. And that particular time, as this boat went over the first time, this little girl who's Irish, she said, "Oh, to be sure," she says, "I can't swim. I don't believe this." And she just disappeared into the water. And then we went through the capsize drill, got everybody out, looked for the bailer, and the bailer wasn't there. Now, whether somebody had put the bailer in and the bailer hadn't been tied in, and it was now at the bottom of the lock, or whether, in fact, the bailer had never been, you know, somebody had taken the bailer out, used it to maybe wash the jetty down, and never put it back, I don't know. I didn't check it. I should have checked it. And then once you've got a boat full of water, the moment you start leaning, the water rushes to the other side and tips you over again. And I think we went over 20-something times between that point and the jetty. And we're only about a mile and a half offshore, and we're desperately trying to get back to the jetty to get hold of a new bailer. But that first time we went over, she was terrified, absolutely terrified. The second time we went over, it was, "I don't believe this is happening again." And the third time it is, "Oh no." And the fourth time is, "Not again." And then the fifth time it says, "Oh well, I suppose it's..." And then the sixth time, and it then lessened every time we went over, until eventually she just, you know, lying backwards and falling in the water. There wasn't a problem at all. She got over all the fear. The fear had gone. She was very wet. There wasn't anything else, but the fear had completely gone. But here in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 7, it says, "Go your way, eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart, for God now accepts your works. Let your garments be always white, let your head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with a wife that you love all the days of your life of your vanity, which is given you under the sun, and all the days of this vanity. For that's your portion in this life, and this your labor which you take under the sun. And so whatever your hand finds to do, you do it with your might. For there's no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. In other words, you can't redo something once you get back into the grave. It's too late then to do anything in this life. In this life, this is the life. And is in this life, it's the case that we just get on with it. Get on with this life and do it with our might. My wife was talking about one thing that sticks in her mind. She was helping in the kitchen one time, and she made the custard. And the custard was made, but it was lumpy. And then, so what she had to do is get a sieve, and literally sieve gallons and gallons, because you're catering for 400 people. And therefore, you imagine how much custard you give to each person, and you add that all together, and there are gallons of custard, all that needed to be hand-sieved in order to get the consistency right. She also remembers rolling pastry for 400 people. And she said to me that she doesn't particularly enjoy rolling pastry at the best of times, but rolling pastry for 400. But what that then did is that later on it was a case of, well, we need to go ahead and have, there's 100 people, we need to have pizzas for everybody. Okay, fine, we'll do it. Because you'd already experienced rolling pastry for 400. 100, I mean, that's nothing. 100 pizzas is nothing compared to 400 that was done before. I know that when we first had the sailing down in Loch Lomond, it was a case of making the jetty. Before we actually be able to do anything, we had to make the jetty. And we spent days literally making this jetty. And we didn't have any camping, any campers coming in. Initially, we probably launched from the shore, which is very difficult. If you've got an onshore wind, it is nigh on impossible, quite frankly. And inexperienced campers, you can do it, but it's very difficult with the rocks and everything else that were around there. But the jetty had to be made. You were living in wetsuits all the time, bashing in scaffold poles and tying all the bits and pieces of wood together. But you just got on with it. You gave it a go. You just had to. Eventually, we then got a floating jetty, which is absolute doddle. You just locked it all together and pushed it out. You had concrete weights underneath, and you just had to dive down, find the concrete weights, and hook them on. It was so much easier. But it is a case of just giving it a go. And that is something that was learnt. It is something that, again, in this Laodicean era that we find ourselves, or this Laodicean time, I say the Laodicean era, we don't know where the Laodicean church is today. We're in the time of the shattering. But whether it's going to be classed as the era, I almost certainly think it is. But certainly the Laodicean attitude of mind that you find today, God hates it. He detests it. And we need to make sure that we do overcome that ourselves. So in conclusion, we're in Ecclesiastes. Let's turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And notice it says in verse 9, it says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth, and walk in the ways of your heart, and in the sight of your eyes. But know you that for all these things God will bring you into judgment." In other words, get it right. Fun is fun. Enjoy being a young person. Enjoy, and again, if you and I are implementing some SEPs in the future, in the world tomorrow, or any time in the future, it is a case of making sure that that time is enjoyable. It is an enjoyable time, and there's no problem with having the enjoyment. The enjoyment is certainly something that God wants us to have, an abundant life, a totally abundant life eternally. I know I always read the passage that says the Spirit of God was upon the face of the waters. I can imagine that. I mean, you just imagine flying across the face of the waters. It is. It's something we are built for speed. We just are. We speed with safety. So you can understand that. And God is certainly has a great thrill, I would have thought, flying across the universe at a railroad rate of knots. And so will we. Like calves released from the stall, as it says in Malachi. But it says, "Therefore remove sorrow," verse 10, "from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." Don't just go down the natural way that all the kids outside are going. Go in a way that's going to be fun forever. And to make sure that you pull together and you pull as a team. Give it a go. Go and push the boundaries back. And that's what it was all about. That's what the true SEP, God's true SEP, was indeed all about. But he says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. He says, get those priorities sorted. While the evil day does not come, for the years draw nigh when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. When the sun or the light of the moon or the stars is not darkened, and the clouds, it starts to describe old age then. But it is a time of real fun. And as I say, we will, someday you may well find yourself having the need to restart God's true SEP. And that could well be for you personally in the world tomorrow.